Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good evening and welcome to Swinging from the Hip, episode number 15. Well, this evening could be an interesting one. I've been on training for the whole week, so I haven't had a chance to prep like I normally do. So we're flying by the seat of our pants a little bit, or a lot of it. So we'll see how things transpire, and we'll be looking at the third test between England and the West Indies and look back at the series. But before we do, we welcome Rohit and welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good, good. How are you going, everyone? Yeah,
no, it's good. As I said, it's like let us get into the comment section. Let us know how you're doing as well, and let us know what your thoughts on sections of the show are today, and also let us know anything else you want to discuss. So we'll roll right into it, and we'll get into this week in history. Where you go, mate?
Well, this week in history, we'll start with the birthdays as per. We've had a handful of birthdays this week. We're July 27th. One grumpy Alan Border was born, 1955. Legendary captain for Australia, you'd have to say. Then we had July 27th again, 1969, John T. Rhodes. And July 28th, 1936, Garfield Gary Sobers having a birthday. And July 28th again, 1978, closer to home, our very own injury prone Jacob Oram.
Hey, that rhymes.
It does.
You're a poet and you didn't even know it.
Oh, that rhymed too. And moving on, July 30th. So today, back in 82, Jimmy Anderson, English bowler, celebrating his birthday at the prime young age of 38 today. So, yes, and still playing Test cricket, have you believe. So, moving into a bit of history.
It's interesting. I just got to tell you, I love the story. You say grumpy Alan Border. I love the story of Craig McDermott went a bit off the rails.
Yes.
And I basically told him to pick his chin up. He'll be on the next plane home with a few more colourful, bit more colourful language thrown in there too.
Absolutely. That was a legendary moment on the field of cricket too, because it's the
absolutely
first you've seen a captain actually blow a player up on the field.
On the field. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Management 101 says that you never blow up one of your staff in front of everybody. Yes. You do it behind closed doors. But
exactly.
That was live on TV. That was for everybody to see.
It was. But that was the days where it wasn't so PC and things like that, eh? You just did it, you know,
called absolutely.
A spade back then too, which has been good to see from some of the games that they've been showing on TV of late.
Yes.
Now, carrying on the history side of things here, back in July 25th, 2011, it was the 2000th Test match which was played, and it happened to be the 100th Test match also between England and India, played at the home of cricket there in Lords. And again, 1999, 13th attempt for New Zealand, having finally winning a test at the home of cricket, And Lords there and Christopher Cairns picking up 6 for 77 in that match in the first innings and shooting England out for 186. And then our legendary Grafton boy, Matt Horn, the advantage by scoring a century, getting his name on the board at Lords. And from being 1-0 down in the series, New Zealand went on to win the series by winning the last test as well. So great result there back in 99. And that was a pretty good team we had back then, to be honest. Then moving in to 1884, back in the day, match between Lancashire and Gloucestershire was abandoned back then due to the death of Martha Grace, who happened to be the mother of WG and EM Grace, who were both playing in that game. And 1974, on the same day, 25th July, the start of England's 500th test. It was suspended for 14 minutes on the first morning after a bomb scare. It led to one of the stands being evacuated too. So that was an interesting times back in 74, having a bomb scare at a cricket match.
Yeah, 74. That was...
Yes. My year. July 26, 1993, English cricket hit rock bottom after Australia regained the Ashes with an innings victory. And this for the second time in the series, they won a match where they only lost 4 wickets. They've just been dominant, weren't they, all over them. Graham Gooch resigning after the match, and young Mike Atherton became the new England captain at the young prime age of 25. July 27, 1948, the Don scored his 29th and last Test 100. He made 173, which enabled Australia to canter home to victory at Headingley. And in 1936, England and India scored, get this, in the 1936, right, England and India, they scored 588 runs in a day at Old Trafford, which is still a Test record. And you think about the Tests, run rates these days, and 588's, you know, boys are a long way off that at the moment. Moving on, July 28th, 1977, yes, Beefy Ian Botha made his Test debut for England against Australia, taking 5 wickets on his debut in his first day. And then moving into current history, really, 28th of July 2020, yes, Stuart Broad grabbing his 500th Test wicket on the way to a series victory against the West Indies, which we'll get into a little bit later. And moving into 1973, on the same day, July 28, we'll just make a mention for the English again in the England inaugural Women's World Cup, with England taking victory in that match. And just one of these oddities again, July 29th, back in 2006, couple of stalwarts for Sri Lanka, you'd have to say, and legendary at that. Mahela and Kumar put on a record partnership, scoring 624 runs, and they crowned South Africa into the dirt, batting for 3 days. That's a long time in the field.
That's a long time to bat.
Yeah, and weary legs for the fieldsman. But, Joe Wardner making 374 and Sangakkara 287, and the Sri Lankans went on to win that test by an innings and 153 runs.
Sure, you sort of think, with 3 days used up for Sangakkara and Joe Wardner to bat, you wonder where's the time left to go bowl South Africa out twice.
Exactly. But you got the legendary spinner in that team too, haven't you?
Murali got a 10-wicket bag in that match as well.
Yeah. So that would have helped, definitely.
Totally.
There we have it, this week in history.
This week in history. Thank you very much for that. And we'll move right along into the news this week. And as I said, I haven't been able to prep that week, so news is going to be pretty truncated. But here we go. So, yes, the big news of the week, England taking the series decider comfortably. And we'll have more on that soon. England's also then gone on to announce an unchanged squad to take on Pakistan, which is their next assignment, sort of. And I'll explain that in a sec. So sort of take on Pakistan next, which starts on the 5th of August at Old Trafford. Now, they have, interesting enough, Jofra Archer be happy. They've been given a bit of a leave pass to go home. with strict rules. So that'll be interesting to see where Jofra ends up on his leave pass. Now, I did say sort of their next assignment, because tonight England take on Ireland in an ODI match. Now, that's a separate squad that they've got for that ODI match, England, that is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that transpires and works out, whether Ireland sort of puts up a bit of battle, because there'll be no Archer in the ODI squad and no Stokes and a couple other names as well there. So it'll be missing as well as they are in the Test squad. So after sorting out the T20 World Cup, the ICC have turned their attention to the World Test Championship. Now, planning is underway to reschedule the future tests, as well as having to reschedule the tests that were postponed due to COVID-19. So there were actually supposed to have been quite a few tests played in March of this year that were going to be part of the World Test Championship series. And they all now have to be rescheduled, and the dates now for the final, which would have been next year in England, and but that's all going to have to be rescheduled as well. Going along, and Umar Akmal's three-year ban has been halved by an independent adjudicator, so he's now down to a year-and-a-half ban. Now, he received this ban for not declaring approaches from corrupt individuals or around corruption. And he was handed down that three-year ban effectively by Pakistan, the PCB. That's not the printed circuit board, but the Pakistan Cricket Board. So, and that has been sort of, well, not overturned, but reduced quite considerably by an independent adjudicator. And in rankings news, not surprisingly, after a magnificent match for one Stuart Broad, he has moved up the ICC Test bowling rankings to number 3. He's actually sandwiched between Neil Wagner and Tim Southee at 2 and 4s, respectively, with Stuart Broad taking up the number 3 spot. Rory Burns has moved up 13 spots, son of Montgomery, and he's moved up 13 spots to number 17. And Ollie Pope, who I turned into a fast bowler last week, has gone up 24 places to number 46. Now, that just sounds like a bus waiting to arrive, doesn't it?
So, is that for his bowling?
we all know every batsman rolled his arm over at some stage, surely.
Yeah, they've got a bowler in them, haven't they? They've got a bowler in them. Hey, who's number 1, by the way?
Some Australian guy.
Oh, okay. Right.
Oh, don't ask me difficult questions that I haven't got Patrick the answers Cummins. For. I think I might be, actually. Hang on, let's quickly test bowler rankings.
Because it has to be...
people, I just bring this up. Pat Cummins number 1. Yep, Pat Cummins.
Yeah, and then what? It'd be Wagner.
Wagner at number 2. Actually, this is a bit outdated, the one that's just brought up to me, because it's actually got Jason Holder at number 3. So, so that's a bit outdated, because I definitely think Jason Holder would have, here we go, that's the updated ones. Pat Cummins, oh, geez, now we've got, not now. And, yep, Pat Cummins with 904 ranking points, and Neil Wagner at 843. So, Stuart Broad, Tim Southee, Jason Holder's just moved down to number 5, and Rabada from South Africa, 6, Mitchell Stark in at 7. Jasper Bumrah at 8, Trent Bolt at 9, and Josh Hazlewood at 10. And they round out the top 10 in the rankings there at the moment.
Wow, there's 3 Kiwis in there.
Yeah, there's 3 Kiwis in there. That's
when was the last time we saw that?
Last week, there were still 3 Kiwis in there then. Just saying.
Fair enough. Not quite what I was meaning, but hey.
So moving along, I suppose, here we go into that third and deciding test. And you have to say, I suppose, at the end of the day, it was pretty disappointing, the last 2 tests in particular.
Yeah, I think so. It's like, well, you know, you have to say, it was, whilst it's disappointing, it is a way expected. For the West Indies, expected. England at home, you know, it's always going to be stronger.
Yep.
In their own conditions as well.
Yep.
And I don't know, you see it across some other sports where they're missing home as well, been yes. locked away in their little cupboards there for COVID.
So well, they have been away for, yeah. obviously, we've got to realise that it's not just effectively the 3 weeks of the series. You add on another 2 weeks, of, I think it was, at the beginning as well. So that's been 5 weeks. And one thing, I suppose, you know, we can always go back to the old days when they used to tour for months. But what we have to realise with this is the fact that they've been cooped up. So it's been 5 weeks in isolation, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be the hardest thing. I mean, it was hard enough doing our own isolation, as we all may recall. But, you know, for these guys, yes, being stuck in rooms, not being able to go out and, you know, take your mind off matters, being on the field of play, and just refresh. It's just cricket rammed down you. That's pretty tough doing.
Now, I think we do realize that top level sportsmen, they really do focus on their sport. But even though they focus on their sport to a ridiculous level, you still need to have some downtime to take your mind away from it at some stage, don't you?
Absolutely. They've still got to be able to switch off, right? Because, you know, you go to work, you come home, you switch off, you're off work. Similar sort of thing for these professionals.
What? Yeah. You come home from work and you switch off?
Yeah. Well, you know.
This is switching off that you talk to.
Well, I don't. Anyway, I'm working 24/7 these days.
But... look, so this match was basically, I felt, pretty much over when Stuart Broad did the damage with the bat. Not with the ball, with the bat. And because the way I look at it is that the West Indies could have had England out for under 300. But Broad came in and swung the blade, and he smashed out 62 off just 45 balls.
Yeah, it was a bloody good innings, I feel. I didn't watch it. However, I did catch up little glimpses of him while he was batting, following the commentary on one of the chat things there. And it was just like he was just hammering it from what the commentators were saying, and just swinging. So, yeah, that took that game away for the West Indies, definitely. And
I think from that point, the West Indies mentally was shot. You know, you would have gone from thinking, because basically we go Butler and Pope, but actually built a very good platform. I'm just going to bring up the scoreboard. There we go. There we've got the scoreboard. We got it said Butler and Pope. What's that? What are we? Hang on. My bad. Just get this right. Yep, Butler and Pope. There we go. Butler and Pope actually did do well, and they built up a pretty good platform from England to launch. But then they actually lost 5 wickets for 18 runs. And as the West Indies, you still think, here we go. We're in. Right. We're going to get them out for 300. And mentally, it's a different space, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, that's cricket, though, isn't it? You could set one partnership that can just change a game, too.
In one partnership, but I think the hardest part about it, one partnership and it's a bowler that's carting you around the park and taking the score, as they would have been. They're about 280 for, where has it gone? 280 for 8. And you sort of think, oh, yeah, we'll wrap this innings up. And the next thing you know, you're at 367.
Absolutely. But that's got to go off to Stuart Broad, you know. Been left out of that first test. He had a point to prove as well, I suppose. And hey, I was just saying earlier, pre-show, he was selected to play for England as a batsman first. So,
yes. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. And we digress off. But it's just like when he first came onto the scene, he was seen as a very much a strong, very strong all-rounder.
Yes.
But I think it was the particular series in Australia where he just got bounced out of that series and by the Australians, and he was never the same as a batsman again after that series.
Yeah, it knocked the confidence out of you for sure, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, many batters have gone to Australia coming back home and not being batsmen again.
Absolutely.
You know, we've seen our own players do a similar thing. But that's part and parcel of playing in Australia, though, isn't it?
Yep, they're going to test you. Really, at the end of the day,
exactly. They're going to bomb you, bombard you with bounces and pepper you. It's just the way it is. Yeah,
that's it. So basically, as said, Ollie Pope with a nice 91. You know, after giving up on the bowling, he nicely 91. He would be disappointed to miss out on a century. And Butler and Pope combining for a fantastic partnership, as I mentioned before. And Butler picked up a 67. And again, what you can see there, and we'll look at the bowling figures, is that another issue for the West Indies in this game. And from early on, even though they picked up the early wicket of Dom Sibley, who was scored runs in that second test. So, again, great for the West Indies. Start off, and I think it was the first over of the match, it might have been even. They've picked up a wicket of Dom Sibley. But then after that, they're really not building any pressure. We can see through the economy rates, apart from Kumar Roach, who picked up four wickets, the rest of the bowlers really not really economical. They're, you know, three runs and over in a test match.
Yeah, but that's modern day cricket, isn't it? I mean, look at the partnerships. They were 6 for 267 as a bowling unit, even 2 for 72 or 2 for 280. You're in it. So you can't. So I don't think you can say that. They were getting carted around at that stage, but the wheels definitely fell off when Broadie came out to bat. But overall, I mean, who really is the one that got hammered?
Well, nobody got hammered as such, but I just felt that there was no pressure being built.
Was it loose bowling?
Yeah. There was a lot of loose bowling. I mean, yeah, they got back on top. Obviously, the purple patch, then when they picked up that 5 wickets for 18 runs. But reality is that, I mean, there's lack of pressure being built.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting one because you could still be going at 3.3 in a test match. I suppose it's a little bit on the high side, economy-wise.
If you're picking up the wickets, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
if you're picking up wickets, I mean, like, you're gonna go at high economy because you're going to have an attacking field.
That's it.
So that's what. But here you've got basically you're leaking runs, and you're not picking up the wickets.
Yeah, but I reckon if when the English were 8 for 280, I'm sure those West Indians would have had attacking fields with the last couple of batsmen in there.
Thinking they're going to pick it up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here we go. You know, that's what sort of happens as well, eh? When you've got the attacking field, batsmen's just got to swing through the line and connect and it's gone away. And it can be their day.
It can be their day. And as it, from what I heard, I didn't see Stuart Broad's innings, but from what I heard, he actually did pretty sort of, he was doing quite well.
Yes, yeah.
What are your thoughts? I mean, we were looking forward to seeing Raheem Cornwall getting on there, and not really effective, was he?
That's right. Yes. He's, not picking up a wicket in that first innings. Understandable. Could be, you know, due to pitch conditions.
Yeah.
But he was selected for the spinning ability.
Yep.
He probably, for a spin bowler, 3.14 is probably a tad high.
A tad high. I mean, especially when you look at it, what you're looking for here is with your spin bowler in that first innings, if you're not getting that turn, is to at least dry up one end so that the quicks at the other end can actually attack the batsman. So, again, from my mind, I mean, I know that Taryn would be absolutely disagreeing with me, but he's not here. So,
we can say what we want.
This is like, I'm sorry, for a spin bowler to be wanting him to block up one end as an off spinner in particular, he needed to keep that end tight. And really, at 3.14, he's not achieving that.
No, he's, you know, it's telling me, or telling everyone, actually, he's letting three runs and over go. That's not good. You know, I look at the maidens. Maidens column has only got 5. So he's not really building pressure, really, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. You're sort of like, you're right. When we go back to what you talked about in terms of, you know, in a test match, you can get lucky because there's bigger gaps in there because you've got a few slips in there. So you've got gaps in the field and the like. But what you're seeing from those figures is that normally what you'd see is that you'd see the couple of overs going for a lot of runs.
Yeah.
But here what we're seeing is that actually there's not much pressure being built. There's the odd maiden here or there. And that's quite across the board there.
That's right. I'd like to know who was actually bowling too Broad at that time. Because I like I said, I was watching a bit of the commentary And I think it was Holder that was bowling to him in a couple of overs I was tuned into.
Yeah.
And he was getting carded.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, and Stuart Broad's just swinging from the hip, as we say.
I see what you did there.
There we go, yes. But, you so know, a few Gabriel, 77 for two off your 20-odd overs there.
Yep.
And Roach, four wickets, 72 runs. So it's not bad going for him.
Oh, Roach has done well there. Roach is picking up the wickets. And, I mean, at 2.8, that's going quite well.
That's not too bad, yeah.
Not too bad. And he's creating some pressure. So moving on to the West Indies innings, and really it's
same old.
Oh, geez, what can you say? It's a bit of a disaster.
It's the same old again, isn't it?
It's
no
the same
stability old. There in the top order. No one digging in.
No stability. That's it. I mean, you're sort of basically you've got Campbell, who's obviously taking up an end there, but Braithwaite, Hope, Brooks, and Chase all gone cheaply.
They've gone cheaply. I mean, Hope probably been there for a bit of time. He batted time by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Getting a 64-odd ball, so that's over an hour's worth of batting at least.
Yes.
Not, you know, a lot more than that.
102 minutes there, so, yeah, that's over an hour.
Yeah, oh, I didn't see the – where's the minutes? I can't see the minutes here.
Should have gone to Specsavers.
Oh, dear, my eyes are closing up. But – I tell you though, it's not helping the West Indies when they're not building partnerships, right?
Yep.
And that's where they're missing and lacking, I feel, in that top order. They've got to get out there and build the partnerships. I mean, if you go down to
work together.
Exactly. Yep.
First order of the day is get a 50 partnership, you know.
Yep. Yep.
And just work on 50 partnerships. 50
that's
partnerships.
It.
Yeah.
That's it. Or even break it down a little bit more. Mm.
Yeah. 10, 50 partnerships is 500 runs. See, absolutely. I'm Asian, so I'm good at maths.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, they got a bit of hope there with in the middle, Blackwood picking up a 27, but Holder and Dowridge combining for a good partnership there where they basically put on 68 for that wicket and gave West Indies a glimmer of hope in the fact that, oh, look, we've got this partnership building and going along quite nicely. But just as it was going along nicely, they didn't take advantage of it. And then Dowrich and Holder out for 46 and Dowrich for 37 after making really good starts. Again, just not right through the series, not going on with the score.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's what they're lacking is they get a start but don't make it count.
Yeah,
And that's what's been against the West Indies when it's come to these batting efforts in this last test and the second test as well, and the losing of them, really, because, you know, your first inning sets you up, doesn't it?
That's what we've actually seen, I think, from most of this. Obviously, West Indies in that first test, they batted second, but their first inning score was what set them up the win. It wasn't their effort in the second innings where they sort of put the nerves in the dressing camp.
Almost squandered it.
Yeah. But basically England in that second test, and then obviously in this one as well, in the third test, it's their first inning score that's basically seen them be successful. Yeah.
Well, you know, when a team puts 300 on the board against you in the first dig,
yep.
You've got to put a solid score back on your own first dig too,
yep.
When you're going in reply, right? Because
yes.
If you don't, you're always chasing the game thereafter.
Well, I mean, like
the Windies would have been, yeah.
Well, the Windies in that first innings were in trouble of avoiding the follow-on mark as well.
Yeah.
So that was a real possibility there for a while too. So, and when you look at it, 197. They were basically only 30 runs past the follow-on mark. Whether England would have enforced the follow-on, that's probably debatable. That in that situation with those low scores, probably wouldn't have enforced the follow-on. But you know, it's still not a great feel, isn't it, to know that you didn't make it past the follow-on mark? Again, psychological point.
Yeah, it always is when you're playing cricket. If you don't get that follow-on mark, it's that like you say, psychological, and you're thinking, "Shit, we're back against the wall again here."
Yep.
And your mindset's changed again, right? And you go out to bat again, you know. or if it's not enforced, you're out in the field, but you're still mulling over it.
Yep. And then that man who that man again whose match it was at the end of the day, Stuart Broad picking up 6 wickets off his 14 overs.
Exactly.
That's a fantastic strike rate. Not just the 6 wickets, but the strike rate at in 14 overs to pick up the 6 wickets.
Exactly.
Fantastic. And we look at
It's going to say, look at the economy.
Look at the economy, mate. That's what you're looking at. Your top two bowlers who have gone on record saying we love playing together and we work together as a team and function together well as a team. And Jimmy Anderson, only 2 wickets, 2 crucial wickets, but 1.75, that's building pressure. Broad, picking up the 6 wickets, 2.21. And it's just like your number two, your two top bowlers in the team, standing up and when it counts.
Well, look at the I look at the ratio of the maidens to the overs as well, and that's nearly like a third.
Yep.
From Anderson of his overs being bowled to maidens, that's building pressure.
Yep.
Stuart Broad's pretty similar as well, isn't he? So
that's right.
That's where 8 wickets have come.
That's it. That's where the 8 wickets have come, and really, the interesting one for me is, you know, obviously there's big raps around Jofra Archer, but apart from that second innings in the first test, obviously he wasn't in the second test. But apart from that, there's 3 innings where he really hasn't. There hasn't been a lot from Jofra Archer.
No, but is that, you know, he's still pretty fresh to test cricket.
Fresh to test cricket.
Yeah, and you know, he's probably had his honeymoon period in his first couple of games, and now he's starting to realise test cricket ain't that easy.
That's sport, you know, not just cricket, isn't it? It's the fact is that you get the new kid on the block, and they look great for those first few matches, first few tests. And then you've got so much video analysis these days that people then work out a strategy against that player, whatever sport it is. Yes. And they're able to come up with strategies to combat the effectiveness of that new player. That new player now has to go back to the drawing board and work on their game and see what they need to change. So it's probably a matter of Jofra Archer. He's got the pace. It's basically working on his game now to utilize that pace more effectively.
I'd say so. I mean, I've seen him bowl and, you know, on TV or whatever, but he's definitely a lethal bowler, that's for sure, from what I've seen. So it will be a bit about going back to the drawing board and reanalyzing his game for himself and coming up with different balls that he can bowl, I suppose. You know, throwing the odd surprise, slower delivery or something like that. But variety,
Yeah, well, because when you look at the parts of when I did see the matches right through the test series, the matches I did see, is that apart from Dowrich struggling to play Archer in that second innings in the first test, the way that the West Indies batsmen combated Archer was actually quite comfortable. They came out with a technique where they were just guiding it down backward of point, basically, and using his pace. So they worked out a strategy to handle him.
Yeah, and not forgetting they probably played with him as juniors too, right? Back in the Windies.
Absolutely.
And
age group cricket and coming up, the under 19 team and the like.
So it's not like he's new bowler to them in that sense. But it's just up to Archer now to come up with new plans.
So moving on to the second innings, and realistically speaking, it was like pretty much over. The game was over, really. The series was going to be won by England. It was just a matter of how comfortably they won it. And we can see that from England's second inning response, 226 for 2 declared. All 3 batsmen that made it to the crease putting on some good runs.
Yeah, it looked like the Windies put the white flag up there, didn't it?
Absolutely.
They're ready to go home, really. Stage.
A few 90s in the series, right? Another one for Burns there. Rory Burns getting a 90 there. So it's just like in the first innings, it was Ollie Pope getting the 90. And, we go back to the first, I remember Blackwood getting the 90. So there's been quite a few 90s and nobody's quite got the nervous 90s have really spooked the batsmen in this series.
It has, haven't it? It is, like you say, nervous 90s coming to the fore again.
Yeah.
That's a solid effort there by England, though, isn't it? 226 for two, batting third.
And then, like, obviously with Root coming in and just trying to put the foot down a little bit, not too much, but just trying to put that pressure and giving themselves as much time. I mean, there's 68 coming off only 56 balls.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty solid strike rate there, 120 in a test. Yep. And, you know, that's almost one day, like.
And that's where you're sort of like what you said is like you feel West Indies old raising the white flag.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it looked like they did at that stage.
Yep.
And, you know, not getting much out of the pitch or whatever. But again, you know, economy rates are around that 3+ mark, aren't they?
Yeah, and you have to wonder whether Cornwall will actually get another test, tell you the truth, after this one.
Yeah. You know, how many has he played?
Not many, if any. I know that the previous were against Afghanistan, and that's where he had a good game against Afghanistan. Obviously, and that's off the back of that, is that we're saying, hey, look, get him in there. But reality is, again, you know, speaking of Archer needing to have a lot more variety in his deck, Raheem Cornwall is another one that needs to have a lot more variety in his attack. You know, again, watching him bowl, it was pretty much of a muchness once the batsman got used to his delivery. It was easy to make your adjustments and score some good runs off it. And you can see that with that economy rate of 4.15.
Yeah, you can, can't you? Feel sorry for him, but it's early days for him because he can still come back. He's, again, another one that just needs to work on his game again, really. All due respect, playing Afghanistan, you know, no real world beaters there, aren't you?
Yeah. And, although he is 27, so
time.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I suppose if you look at James Anderson, yeah, he's got all the time in the world.
Absolutely.
He's got another 10 years.
You know, spin bowlers can bowl till at least 35, 36 if they're doing well.
You've got to go do John Embry styles and go over 40.
It'll be interesting. I mean, who else has the Windies got? You know, that's what you've got to look at. Who's on the sidelines?
The West Indies have got someone who's really good, but he doesn't want to play Test cricket for them.
Yeah.
Neil Ryan.
Exactly.
The money in the money in all the T20 leagues, isn't it? That's the problem there, I suppose.
That's exactly what it comes down to, isn't it?
Yeah. So we finally make our way to the second innings for the West Indies, and 2 days to bat, and it was never going to happen, was it?
No. Well, you know, we've seen it in the second test where they're not building partnerships again in the first innings here.
Yep.
Same couple of players putting their hands up again, looks like.
And the fact is that when you look at Broad and Anderson taking the top off. Hang on, actually, are we looking at the second? We're looking at the first innings. I was sort of thinking that didn't look right to me. There we go. There we got the second innings. I was saying, Broad really knocked the top off the top of the innings, and it was, you know, again, the Broad show continued, and really it was just downhill from there in a matter of how long would it take, and the answer was not long.
Exactly, and Wokes collecting a fiver there too. You know, I think he missed out so much in the first innings. We picked up one wicket, I think, in that first stig.
Yep.
And picking up six for the match, so not bad going for Wokes there also.
Yeah, so basically to wrap it up, this was really, as I've said so many times already today, it was the Broad show from day one when he got a 60. It was a big haul in the first innings, getting the 6 wickets, and then he was smashing the top off the West Indies in the second, getting 10 wickets and 60 runs for the match. Well deserved. We'll probably end up on the old honours boards somewhere there at Old Trafford if they have them.
No doubt.
And it's just like, I think, as we talked about off here, I think the fire under the that was lit under Stuart Broad when he was left out of that first test.
Yeah, well, he got, what, 10 wickets in the match, right? He's yeah, definitely a man of the match there for that performance. But, yeah, they definitely lit the fire under him, not picking him in that first test match, that's for sure. And he came out to prove a point, and I think he's delivered.
He delivered big time, didn't he, really? He performed in the second test. He performed in the third test. And he's saying, don't forget about me. And it's just like, and again, as we mentioned right at the top of this week in history, it did happen this week in history. He brought up his 500th test wicket.
Yeah.
So it's a nice way to segue into the top bowlers in the that have got 500. And he's joined the 500 club. So we'll just bring that up. And there we go. So then we got Stuart Broad with 500 test wickets from 140 matches. And, you know, you look at those names on that list, and illustrious company, isn't it, from Mullerithran, Mattia.
Shane Mullerithran.
I can't even get that out. Anyway, Kumbley, Anderson, which is, I think a lot of people get surprised when you see Anderson there, but then you also got to remember he is 38 today.
Yes.
Glenn McGrath, Courtney Walsh, and then Stuart Broad. So, that's amazing company. And when you look at his figures and that, he's got plenty of time left. He's got work to do.
He's still got time, long as he remains fit. You know, he'll still be playing for a fair amount of time yet, and pushing closer to the 600 mark if he wants to.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm just going to bring up quickly Jimmy Anderson's. And we can see there, he's 38. Jimmy Anderson is 38 and still performing, right? Yeah. So when we look at that, and he's played 153 test matches. Stuart Broad, by comparison, has played 140. So he's actually played a lot of cricket in his 34 years compared to Jimmy Anderson, who's done 150-odd and he's 38. Yes. So he's only Stuart Broad's only 34, and he's got another 4 years or so in him if he carries on like Jimmy Anderson.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and the thing is, like Jimmy, I mean, he had an injury a season or so ago, and, you know, he's had to come back from that as well. But he's probably had more injuries later in his career, but still managed to get on the park for England, which is a testament to his own fitness and ability to, you know, recover quickly and get back on the park. He's a legend for England, you have to say, you know.
It's just like, but you know, just looking at this list of bowlers that have got 500 wickets or more, it's hard to comprehend getting that many wickets. I remember when I was at school and I ran home when New Zealand were playing and Richard Hadlee was going to get his 400th. He was going to become the first player to get 400 test wickets, first bowler to get 400 test wickets. It's like, and now you've got players, Stuart Broad getting 500. Morally, 800, you know, you don't even remember these things.
No, I mean, that's phenomenal, isn't it? 800 test wickets in 133 matches. Yep. It's just incredible. I mean, there's a little bit of a stigma around it, but hey, you still have to get out there and get them, right?
Well, look, I mean, we've all played against chuckers at some stage or other. And it's like, just because you chuck the ball doesn't mean that you're going to be good at it, chucking the ball.
That's right.
If you're going to be that guy that basically says he's a chucker, he chucked it and still got 800 wickets.
Yeah. If you're saying that, he was a chucker.
If you're saying that. But it's just like, no, I mean, like anybody outside of Australia, he wasn't really a chucker.
No, exactly. It's just Daryl Hare thought he was, didn't he?
Just Daryl Hare.
But isn't it interesting, your top three, all spinners. Yeah. Mm.
Think about when we were growing up, apart from when Shane Warne finally came along, who wanted to be a spin bowler?
Exactly. I'm sure everyone wanted to be Richard Hadlee.
I was Richard Hadlee. Well, you know, the fact that I batted left-handed and bowled right-handed, I was Richard Hadlee, you know.
I'm in the same boat, bro. Just not fast.
But no, you're right. It's really interesting to see. At the top of the list is basically three spinners. Now, and yep.
What I was going to say from there is when you look at the top three spin bowlers in that list and look at the bags that they've collected in the fives and the tens, you know, they're, you can see why they're up there.
Absolutely.
Why they're so damn good.
67 five-wicket bags for Murali, 37 for Shane Warne, 10 wicket bags, 22 for Murali. You know, it's just, it's just phenomenal.
Crazy stuff,
Stuff. And when you go down the, you go down that list, and, I mean, you look at Stuart Broad, who's just made it to the 500 club, and he's still only, he's only got two 10-wicket bags.
Exactly, yeah. So, and getting 10-wicket bag is not easy, you know.
No.
That's, you know, I remember a coach telling me that's bigger than scoring 100 for in a game, you know, right, to try and get 10. Or even just getting a five-wicket bag is pretty tough as it is. So he used to compare that to being a scoring a century.
Right.
Got a fiver. So I was like, shit, and then what happens when you get a tenth for then? It's a double century.
It's a triple century. Yeah. It's a triple century.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and look at the, you know, you got Broad, Walsh, McGrath, Anderson. You wouldn't say they're out and out pace bowlers. Maybe Walsh is the quickest of the lot, but.
No. Yeah, Courtney Walsh would be the quickest of all those guys there, basically. No, I mean, realistically speaking, your Andersons and your Glenn McGraths and your Stuart Broads generally around the 135 mark and maybe topping out at 140.
Yeah. So they're obviously, you know, able to put the ball on a dime and do things with the ball.
Do the things with the ball and slow it down so it's go at a pace that the batsman can actually catch up with and hit, get a nick on it.
Well, that's it too, isn't it? You want them to be able to hit the ball and nick it.
You can be bowling at 160, but if the batsman can't catch up with them, the only way you're going to go through them is through hit the wickets.
Exactly. And that's the thing. So it is interesting, you know, the slower bowlers, so to speak. And medium pace are right on the top 10.
Yep, you'd call them medium paces. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, moving along, I'm just going to quickly bring up, as I said, there is more live cricket happening tonight, and that is with Ireland. So I'm just seeing if we can bring up any players or not. Sorry about this.
Did you watch the first test Ireland played against England probably a year or two back when Ireland were on the verge of victory?
I remember I vaguely remember the game. Yes.
Wasn't that their first official test? I can't recall, but
that was
a really close one for the Poms in nearly losing to Ireland in their first test. And I think that game was being played in Ireland too, I believe. And I was watching it, and everyone's wearing, you know, three or four sweaters. Must have been pretty warm for them.
Be a good day. Well, I mean, like if we go through the team here, I mean, like, as I said, England are running two squads. They're running the test match squad and they're running the ODI squad to play against Ireland in this one-day series. So you've got your normal players with your Ian Morgans and Johnny Bairstow. Came in Moeen Ali, so Adil Rashid, Jason Roy, James Vince, and Sam Curran's brother Tom Curran there. So you'd say there is an opportunity there. The door is ajar for Ireland to put pressure on the England. I don't know if they'll be able to topple them, but. They're a starter's chance. There is definitely a starter's chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And Denley is there as well. He just scored some runs in that last test match, so he'll have a bit of form behind him. Interesting. Denley? Joe.
Where?
Right under
you
Liam.
You need to get a Specsavers again.
Joe Denley, right there. Keep going.
Oh, sorry, there. Right there. Yeah, I need to go to Specsavers. Hang on, I'll put my glasses on.
So, you know, and the ones that really is missing there is it'd be Stokes, wouldn't it?
Stokes, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Stokes and Butler. And like in that last test match, Stokes didn't even need to bowl. I mean, he was carrying an injury,
yep.
Quad injury, I believe. So he played as a batsman.
But that's how highly they regard them, right? Regard Ben Stokes, is the fact is that, oh, yeah, he's injured as a bowler, but we'll still carry him as a batter.
Absolutely. I mean, we didn't feature him in that test match either, didn't we, at all, mention him. So as a batter, he's probably not scored the runs. He batted in the first innings, but 20. Not the second.
Yeah. Yep.
But batted at number four, I think, in that first dig.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, he's the guy that is missing from this squad. Obvious choice.
Obvious choice.
Yeah.
And then probably the other one that I'm sort of thinking of is in a one-day squad specifically would be like a Jofra Archer. They've been selecting him quite consistently in their normal one-day squads.
Yeah. And that will be because he's been kept back for the other test matches, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right, if against Pakistan, which starts in a week's time. So you've got basically within the Ireland squad, when we're looking at it, there's some experienced campaigners there. When you've got Andy Balbirnie, and when you're going down the list, we've got Kevin O'Brien, William Porterfield, you know, these guys that have been in the Ireland squad for a fair while now and are starting to be, you know, well, they do perform at top level. Then they got the ability and they do turn out good performances.
Yeah. I must admit, I probably only seen the captain's name and Kevin O'Brien's name in that squad. So yeah, don't really know too
much. You've seen William Porterfield. He's been in a couple of World Cups.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's an obvious chance for Ireland to have a crack here and try and grab a win.
Yeah.
But you'd have to say, you know, again, it's in England.
Yep.
Home turf. So the backs will be against the wall, but hey, great experience for them, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, it's, and the fact that there's more cricket going on, so that's always good as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So that's starting tonight, right?
Tonight at 1 o'clock our time or New Zealand time. If I just go back to the series, bring that up. Yeah. So 1 a.m. It will be starting our time, basically.
Brilliant.
Right. And then England next week, well, we'll be talking about, if I sort myself out here, one moment, please, people.
Against Pakistan.
So England versus Pakistan.
Is that a full test series, or what are they doing there?
Three tests, if I could get the computer working properly. Sorry, people.
Are they going to be playing any one days? I believe the
there we go.
Full Pakistan team coming.
It is basically the players that have made themselves available.
Yeah.
So that's basically it. And just going back to what Simon you say, Simon, you know, Simon's saying that the Irish cricketers are stronger in ODI and you know, that's the thing, that they have actually put out some pretty good performances at ODI level. So we'll be looking for that to continue today. And as we mentioned, they have got that opportunity with the fact that England haven't got all of their normal ODI players because they've split into two squads.
Yeah. Well, it just shows that they got the player depth too, though, doesn't it?
Yep. They've got the player depth, absolutely. So as Simon's mentioning, these ODI matches are World Cup qualifying matches as well for the next World Cup, which will be in 2023 off the top of my head.
Yeah.
In India. So that's it. But moving back to the England-Pakistan, so there are three test matches. They're starting next week on the 5th of August, and that will be again at Old Trafford. So they're having two matches at Old Trafford. Then they move back to the Rose Bowl at Southampton for the second and third test. So the opposite of what happened in the West Indies series. They had one in Southampton, two at Old Trafford. This is going to be one at Old Trafford and two at Southampton at the Rose Bowl. And just going down through, there are, just part of it, there's also some T20 matches between England and Pakistan as well.
So they've got three T20s and then the three test matches, and that's so part of that T20 sort of game setup would have been more towards that upcoming World Cup.
That's right. And when we look at the dates, end of August, you know, the cricket, the T20 World Cup was going to start in October. Again, off the top of my head, it was going to start in October. So they would have been definitely lined up with the thoughts of the World Cup in Australia to come. So they probably would have moved directly from there to camp in Australia.
Absolutely. So, you know, going in after three matches into Aussie for that World Cup.
And just on the World Cup front, it's a bit disappointing, I have to say. I mean, like, I don't know. When you look at the fact that they've just run the test match in England, and the, I suppose, the template has been laid on how to manage it. I suppose the issue we've got in Australia is the fact is that now you've also got COVID running rampant through Victoria. And so you would have had that issue, but, and it's just like, hey, there's little New Zealand down here. We're COVID free. Just bring them down here. Yeah. We could have done it.
Well, we could have, couldn't we? So, you know, why wasn't that on the table?
IPL. Worry about Dubai. Don't worry about the Emirates. Come down to New Zealand. We're here. We're saying hi. We're ready for you.
Exactly. I mean, doesn't the Emirates still have to approve it?
Yeah, look, I haven't actually heard that. Unfortunately, I haven't been doing the news this week. I've been on a course, so I haven't been able to keep up with the play on what's happening on that front. But you're right, the government, the Abu Dhabi or Dubai, I just want to say Abu Dhabi, the Dubai government have to approve it. So I haven't heard on what the latest there is in saying that. The Dubai and Indian governments do have a very good relationship, so I'm pretty sure it'll go ahead. I can't see it. I'll be honest, I can't not see it going ahead.
Oh yeah, you can't see it not going ahead for sure.
I mean, you've just
right.
UFC's just had Fight Island there, haven't they? So again, templates have been sort of set up for how, you know, how things could be run and the like, or what needs to be processes that need to be run through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the problem having it in New Zealand, we had the World Cup here in 2015, right?
Yeah.
It was shared again with Australia, but it's that time zone thing that's against us as well, isn't it, in a way?
Time zone thing's a little bit against us, but we'd have to start the matches probably, you know, keep BCCI happy, 8 o'clock at night, which we did recently on the last India tour, where all the T20 matches started at 8 o'clock at night, as opposed to our normal start time of 7. And then we also, I believe did we have some one days there as well?
We did.
They started a bit later as well. Obviously, instead of starting, I think at 1 o'clock, they started at 2 instead of 2 or 3 sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the nature of the sport nowadays, isn't it? It's all about the dollars and return on that.
Well, where do you get the money from? It's broadcast rights. Everything comes from broadcast rights, and so you basically work to what that is. And
But they had the opportunity to have a go down under to even have the World Cup for the T20.
I sort of look at the T20 in particular as something that New Zealand could host and do quite well. Just as a single country entity type thing, as opposed to shared with Australia.
As long as everyone's staying up in their isolation units and not making runners.
The thing is that they'd get to run around the field anyway. Where you'd put them somewhere in with a field close by.
But do we have the? I suppose the question is, do we have the capacity and the ability to hold those many teams and the facilities, training facilities and things like that?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, like, realistically speaking, if we go back, I understand what you're saying, but you'd spread them out through the country. You wouldn't necessarily have all the teams in Auckland. You're probably right then you might struggle with facilities and the like. But you could easily, if you spread them through the country, you could host the teams, I believe, no worries. You know, you're spreading them. You did a couple of teams in Auckland, a couple of teams over the shore, North Shore of Auckland, so that they can use different, you know, and two teams could share the facilities, right? In terms of like, so you've got it in the morning, you've got it in the afternoon, there you go. And then you got Napier, Hamilton, let's not forget Hamilton, Wellington, You could probably Nelson. You could put a team in Nelson, Christchurch, and Dunedin, and between those those cities, I think we'd be able to manage it. As Simon mentioned, I think really what it, and we're realistic about it. It just comes down to better time zones for out of the UAE or those Arab countries for India.
That's
which is a shame, but yeah, as said, we got mind you, you know, it would just mean that if we had them coming on at 8 o'clock at night, it is good timing in one sense. I think all the little Indians will be getting up to have a cup of chai.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's why we had to play it at 8 o'clock and not 7, right?
So that they're up for it.
But what does it mean now? I don't know what the time difference is when you are in Dubai, but we'd have to be through the night. It's all close to it.
I'm just looking up here. So the time in India. Actually, look at this.
Is it?
What are we talking about? Having a cup of chai in the morning? It's 2:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, the afternoon cup of tea.
It's the afternoon, yeah, just before they end up having their seat. We know this because in the villages, it's the afternoon sleep time.
Yeah. Siesta.
Siesta time. As Simon's mentioned, I missed out the mount. Obviously, you'd have the mounts, you could station a team in the mount or a two in the mount, really. You've got
two or three good players on the mount, isn't there?
You've got some good hotels, and just down the road there, you've got Bay Oval with the mount. So, I don't think we'd have a problem hosting it. And looking at the time, it's actually not a bad time either, really. It's an afternoon for them. It's not in the evening. It's not evening, but, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, that's not a bad time to watch a game of cricket for them.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And you still got the evening after 3 hours of play.
Yeah, absolutely. Go down to Juhu Beach and have a feed.
Yeah, I can't even remember the name of the beach now. The other one. No, the other one. Get there.
It's past. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's too long ago. It was 91 since I was there. So, well, that's we're starting to ramble now. So I suppose it's a good time to call it quits, isn't it? Look, everybody, thanks for watching Swinging from the Hip again. Really appreciate you tuning in and watching it, making those comments in the chat rooms. And also, if you're listening to this on your podcast afterwards, you appreciate it. Make sure you all go in there and you hit that share button. Really want you to share now. So likes, great. But if you can share it and get that name out there, really trying to build that New Zealand Sport Radio brand. And obviously, all the shows on New Zealand Sport Radio, especially Swinging from the Hip. But just to remind you, we've got the morning sports briefing every day at 7 a.m. Okay, that's Monday right through around to Sunday and Monday again. Is that 7 a.m. That's the morning sports briefing. On Monday nights is Driving Mall and all your news on rugby, as well as some good club roundups from around New Zealand. It's Wednesday night, we have the league show, The Standoff, so you can find out what's happening in the NRL and who's been a naughty boy this week. Thursday night's the best night of the week, and that's obviously with Swinging from the Hip. And we've got the review. Previews for Super Rugby Aotearoa and Super Rugby AU or Super Rugby Gold, which is the Australian version, on Friday nights. And then a preview where you can join Cornflake and me, usually having a good ding-dong argument about why him trying to get the whole Highlanders pack into the All Blacks. So make sure you're listening to New Zealand Sport Radio right through the week, right through the day. You've got plenty of shows to keep you entertained. And we'll see you back here at 8 p.m. on Thursday on Swinging from the Hip for your cricketing fix. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.